Secret friends, unite!
Welcome to the Secret Friends Unite podcast, episode 468. This is your guide to the geek side, and I am one of your hosts, Todd Oxtra, joined by the churlish one, Charlie Carden.
Churlish like Sunday morning, or in this case, the afternoon. Yes, what's going on? Another gray day here in Michigan, and we are just so happy about it. Happy Easter to those who celebrate. I've done nothing. There were no eggs around my house, except the ones in the refrigerator, and I did not find toys inside of them. just little chickens that flew out and went, bark, bark, and it's a weird day. It's a weird day.
Yeah, my wife's plan is to go with my son tomorrow and get all of the Easter candy when it's cheap.
I have done that traditionally after Valentine's Day. I would go and get my wife
some future gifts.
Yeah, my wife some trinket or whatever and be like, hello. Last year's thing or Valentine's candy. Yeah. Oh, yuck.
Very good. Very good. Well, we are joined by a new secret friend who's been a member of the Co-op Mode podcast. Great guy. And
thank you.
Actually, new host of a podcast called Spreading the Nerd. That's Mr. Clint Coombs. But before we even let Clint say anything, it's also Clint's birthday.
What? Oh my God. That's why you had him on. Okay. All right. Early. Are we going to start doing that with all of our co-hosts? You can be on, but only if it's your birthday.
Only it's your birthday. It's like how we're going to, you know, I'm giving you the gift of a like star and I'm naming it after you. Mm-hmm. Right. I am making you a guest on our podcast.
There's a podcast episode. The
best birthday present ever.
In your name, so yeah.
Exactly. So Clint, what number birthday is this for you, if you don't mind?
Number 41.
Ooh, 40 with a bullet. I remember that because my dad has a much younger brother, and when I was a teenager he turned 31 and he said, oh, it's 30 with a bullet. So that's always stuck with me. So anytime you're you get it. That's the bullet.
You're firmly in the 40s. Well, yeah. It's great to have you, Clint. Happy birthday. Thank you very much. And just want to ask you first, very compelling question. How did you become the nerd today that you are today? Your geek origin story.
Probably started back, I think it was like first grade or it might have been kindergarten. I can't quite remember. But I just remember my parents coming home with the original Nintendo Entertainment Center and Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt. And it was all over from there. You know, my dad yelling at me not to hold the gun up to the TV, shooting the ducks and stuff. And
what was that noise? Doodly doodly dude.
Yeah. And the dog getting up laughing at me every time. Yeah, oh, yeah. But that's probably the origin. That's where it started. And then probably like the Super Nintendo is where it really heavily hit. And then, you know, my bank account's been terrible since then. So,
so do you have a favorite superhero series, horror series, or like a science fiction series that you're really into?
I mean, for movies, probably Star Wars, probably.
Then you're admiring my Yavin.
I saw that. Jacket, and I was like, that is very spiffy. I like that.
Thank you very much.
But probably the Alien series as well, or anything in that universe, Predator, stuff like that. But yeah, definitely that.
Very cool. Yeah, a mix of horror and sci-fi, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. Right? But definitely a fan of, you know, Marvel, any superhero, just anything nerdy.
Yeah. Honestly. I like it.
Well, very good. Well, we're in for a ride because this is also our spoiler cast for Godzilla X Kong, the new empire, hidden empire. Empire.
The underside,
the Under Armour,
because every Schwartz has two sides. But before we get to that, let's pay some bills. and give some homage to the wonderful people that support us via our Secret Friends Unite Patreon, our squad. If you visit patreon.com/secretfriendsunite, you can actually do a free 7-day trial of all of our fun bonus material. We've got a couple of great recurring shows. Todd and I do a comic book show. I do a show called The Facts Geek Life, where we take a classic series and a season of that and kind of break down a handful of episodes. We would love to have you check us out. So that would be delightful. We also have no ad episodes there of this and other of our usual free stream programs. And you can also find us over on YouTube Podcasts, which I finally started doing that. I'm like, oh, look at that. You just turn that bad boy on. Don't need to sign up or any ding dang old thing. I love it. Over on the Friends with Benefits level, John Sedorf, the awesome Phoenix Sisters cosplay, Brendan Myers, Corey in HD, and friend of the show, Matthew Keel. Our top tier folks are the BFFs, the awesome Nias family of the Twin Cities, Sean, Stella, and Henry, and your friend and my friend, frequent collaborator, Missy Merchant. We are very grateful for each and every one of you. One more time, patreon.com/secretfriendsunite. You can also get there from our website or from our link tree. And you get 7 days to check out all that material at no cost. So we would love to see you over there. And if you like what you hear, please think about sticking around. Well, Todd, this week in covers, you know, the only dial I've ever heard is Dial M for Murder, which has a negative connotation. Dial H for Hero definitely seems a little bit more, you know, on the level, but this is a crazy cover. So this July, this is getting into the 60s. This looks much more like 1950s, like, in my opinion. But this is from the Summer of Love. No, it's not. Yeah, it was the Summer of Love in 1967, or was that
67 through 70, I think, or the Summer of Love.
69 was Woodstock, so 67 was the Summer of Love. So this came out during the Summer of Love. Oh, goodness, excuse me.
You okay? Let me take over?
I can't handle it. No, I can do it. So this is the house. Now, is the comic House of Mystery Dial H for Hero, or is it one of the two? But at any rate,
it's House of Mystery, and this was featuring Dial H for Hero.
Okay. Right off the bat, some weird stuff, even just boilerplate stuff. DC Comics was called DC in a circle, Superman over the top. DC National Comics was potentially the name of the company back then. It seems like a weird kind of a branding nightmare. You know what I mean? Because DC, Detective Comics, we've always known that to be the name of the company. They slap Superman on there, maybe for the fact that somebody would look at that and say, what the hell is this? I guess, but yes, Robbie Reed is the boy who can change into 1,000 superheroes. That is the Dial H for Hero bit. And in this one, it says, stalemate! Trapped by each other, who will break out first? Superhero Hoopster or supervillain Moon Man? Oh, save some of that moon money for me, McCutcheon, from The Simpsons. So they're actually in front of a real-life location. That is the Griffith Park Observatory in the Hollywood Hills in Los Angeles, which I visited last year. But, so Moon Man is he's basically a rock for it's blue with a bunch of craters on his head, thus implying that he's the actual moon dude, but he's a dude, right? So it's a head. Is he a cyclops? It kind of looks like it's maybe one eye. But so Hoopster obviously just puts hoops around him because that's what you can see in this picture here. And like I said, Moon Man is shooting some kind of fuzz or mist or something. And I can say honestly, I can't remember the last time I've seen a cover where the only result I'm interested in is seeing them both dead. I don't know. Is that weird?
I don't know. So do either of you know anything about Dial H for Hero?
I don't know anything about any of this. Like, nope. It's very bizarre.
It's a cool cover. That's about all I can add to it.
It's so, out there.
So the hero dial is essentially a random, basically think about it like it's almost like a wish generator of different superhero abilities, but it's always random. So essentially Dial H for Hero, Robbie Reed, can basically be a different hero every time he dials. He doesn't know what he's going to get, essentially. And in this this issue, he became the Hoopster, and he also became the Mole Cometeer. So he was two heroes in this comic, and he took on Moonman, who actually was a villain called Mr. Thunder, but he got irradiated and turned into Moonman. So there you go. Enjoy it while you can. You know, this is kind of cool as a kid. Imagine you could be any superhero, but it always goes wrong.
But in doing that, you're going to then turn around and, you know, subject yourself to horrifying persecution and death. I just don't know that this is the best way for a young person to spend their time. But at any rate, the way that I always love to spend my time is chatting it up with our senior news correspondent. That's Madam Webb at 124 years young. She's still working super hard down at the corner of Hollywood and Vine, finding us all the latest scoops in our news with Madam Webb. So let's go.
Now it's time for Madam Webb's rumors and news. Take it away, boys.
Thank you, Madam Webb. We're going to talk about some awesome stories today provided by Madam Webb. Charlie, just to let you know, she has decided she is going to be forming a union for the elder journalists of America. She is asking for these different benefits. She wants, geritol on a monthly basis. She wants that covered. She also wants, a large print periodicals, and she also wants to replace her Rolodex.
Well, I think I can help with the Rolodex, but the large print thing sounds expensive because it's ink, and we all know how expensive ink is, but maybe we can work something out with the people at HP. I think they have a monthly subscription service. We'll get something sorted, because we certainly can't do without her, because otherwise, how would we not hear about great stories like this one from our friends over at Deadline? We're letting us know, that, and again, such a contradiction in terms, the never-ending story to be adapted as a series of live-action films from Seesaw and Michael ND Productions. And again, the inference is that the NeverEnding Story is making a comeback, but much like LL Cool J said in his epic 1991 opus, Mama Said Knock You Out. What did he say, Todd?
Don't call it a comeback. And by the way, Clint, if you've survived that segue, we can actually talk about this story. And the story is the fact that the Neverending Story began as actually a book in 1979, a German book. I didn't know this. Translated into over 45 languages.
But if I might, the German piece of it makes perfect sense. That entire film, that was a German film, filmed in Canada and Germany. So I guess that makes sense to me, because I looked in on it once long upon ago, because it seems so weird, you know, with the music and everything. So yeah, I guess that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So became a movie in 84. And then there was a series of, I don't know if the rest of them came to films like theaters, or they were just direct to video, because there was multiple NeverEnding Story movies, and they were obviously diminishing returns. Some were like a direct sequel. So essentially really only one good quality piece came out of that adaptation. Well, they're going to go back to the, back to the source material apparently, and try to reboot it and come up with new films. It's going to be basically covering us that alongside the breathtaking journey of Atreyu and Bastion, the real reason why stories play such an important role in our lives that we want to internalize them in all shapes and forms throughout our lives. So this is very generic talk of, we'd like to make more money with this license.
generic of talk. The power of myth.
So at this point, Clint, is the original NeverEnding Story, does it mean something to you? And are you interested in more versions of this story?
I love the original, because I think it came out in 1984, the original. I probably didn't watch it till I was probably like five or so. And I definitely fell in love with it, with all the, you know, the graphics and stuff of it. And of course, the story, the music, the soundtrack. I still remember the soundtrack even as an adult from a kid. But I don't know about a remake on this one, or even continuation of the story. I don't want it to to muddle the original type of thing. So, I mean, we're still in the very early phases and there's no casting news or anything. So, I guess we'll see, but I'm on the fence.
This to me, if I might, is yet another legacy sequel that no one wants. It sounds like right. a horrible idea. Because again, my hang up in particular with we've taken this Disney, you know, cartoon that people, you know, we took the Lion King, we took, you know, the Little Mermaid. I was having this conversation with somebody. I was having this conversation with a guy who came to fix my dryer because he wanted to talk about Star Trek because he saw my stuff everywhere down here in the basement. And we started talking about legacy sequels or stuff that's adapted for no reason. And who cares about the new version of Aladdin? Who cares about Lion King? They're trying to make, obviously, oh, we're going to pump it up for a new generation. Or if you're not doing something new or different with it, who cares? You know, if you're not really expanding a story, that never ending story, that 84 film was very complete as far as I was concerned. You know, it was a story told in 3X. It had a satisfactory conclusion. And then they made two sequels to it. Jack Black was in the third one, I think,
oh, really? Oddly enough.
Yeah, no, that was something. It was one of those clickbaity things I came upon long ago. And here's Jack Black in the Neverending Story 3. I don't remember too many more details. But, yeah, this seems totally awful. But as Todd said, hey, we own this license and we want money. So we're excited about it. Yeah, it's just basically that's where it's at.
I love it. And, you know, Charlie, there's a video game series called Final Fantasy. And the funny part about it, it's never final. Essentially, yeah. they named the title because, like, if this fantasy series doesn't, you know, succeed, it's done. Yeah. This is our Final Fantasy.
You're
so
done.
In a lot of ways, the name doesn't necessarily mean anything. And it's never ending. It actually ended. And now it's coming back. So it's returning. It's rebirth.
The ended fantasy.
And I love the name of the band that performed the song, Lamahl. Lamahl. Lamahl.
Let's go to Lamahl. Oh! segueing into the next one, Todd, we were talking about legacy sequels, and this is a trailer for one that I think I might have some interest in, so break it down.
Yeah, so Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice. And I won't say it a third time. Not Charlie.
But I didn't say it three times.
You can't say it more than three times, obviously. If you say it three times, you get the ghost with the most, and that is Beetlejuice, our friend. You know, essentially, this was the movie that really cemented Michael Keaton, you know, as a geek god of like the 80s because you had him in Batman, Mr. Mom, Johnny Dangerously.
Multiplicity.
That was later. But yeah, yeah. I mean, and him teaming up with Tim Burton, being a frequent contributor for Tim Burton. And, you know, I felt like with Tim Burton, sometimes it's, you know, diminishing returns, but there's got to be a reason that they came back to this. Obviously, money. We can take care of that. But to get everybody back, essentially, that they could, Michael Keaton, even when he's taking a paycheck, does his best. And I love the fact that, you know, this is essentially most of the same cast, but we are also getting Jenna Ortega to the cast, which is awesome. There's another person in this top image. I don't know who that is. I'm trying to figure out if someone else that we are aware of. Oh, they're not in it.
Nope. Yeah.
I'm trying to find.
You're talking about when they're standing in the cemetery?
The cemetery. The yeah, there's a.
Oh, the
yeah,
person, and, the person all the way to the right.
Oh, it's.
Who is that?
The mother, isn't it?
No, other side. So if you go.
Yeah, all the way, all the way to the right.
Next to Winona Ryder.
Winona.
I don't know.
Is that the husband? Must be the husband.
Oh, Justin Theroux is in this. Oh, so it's probably okay. Him. Monica Bellucci is in this, and Willem. Yeah, Monica Bellucci, and also Willem Dafoe is in this. I did not know that.
Yep.
Monica Bellucci, and I don't know if it says it in this article, is playing Beetlejuice's wife.
Oh,
that's what
really?
That's. I don't. Yeah. And
congrats to the lucky couple. I'm glad he found happiness.
Know. Yeah. I mean, and she's gorgeous too, so that's absolutely fantastic. But we got Jenna Ortega taking over the angsty, gothy teen role. And Catherine O'Hara is awesome. And there's, as I said when this first trailer first dropped a couple weeks ago, we know whose funeral they're at, obviously. They're celebrating the death of the career of a certain person who was in the first film, whose name we're not going to mention.
Yes, because at first we weren't 100% sure, but I guess it's going to be Justin Theroux is going to be the husband of Winona Ryder, which right. is kind of
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
He looks like a dandy guy. And so right. at this point, obviously, we've got a recurring events where the daughter basically goes up to the attic and unveils the town where Beetlejuice right. emerges, and he says the juice is loose.
Right.
At this point, like I said, I'm hoping the reason they came back, they have a hell of a story. It's going to be awesome. But the originally was right. supposed to be a Ghostbusters or Beetlejuice sequel where he went to the beach or something like that, which is seemingly weird and odd, but that kind of right. stopped. So,
well, maybe you go to the beach. Maybe just because you mentioned it, they'll jump on in. So I'm excited. When so we're getting a trailer. So is this a summertime film? Is this going to factor into our summer September? Movie wager, or is it the fall? Yeah.
I think it's September 6th.
It is.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. So just right after yeah. Labor Day. So that is just, yeah, because we do, Clint, we do myself and Todd and our other college roommate, John, for about almost last 10 years. We do a summer movie wager that's just by the dollars. What are the top 10 films for the summer? And it goes from, you know, the 1st of May to Labor Day. And so nice. This is the first film after that. So, I yeah. Like and Todd won for the first time this past year. So he's hoping, and our you'll, as a Star Wars man, you'll appreciate this. Our recurring statue, which Todd is obviously going up to get, is a plastic statue of Prince Xizor from The Shadows of the Empire that I bought for $3 at my Lifetime comic shop of Argos Books in right here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So, yes.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, so yeah, that was Todd's first win, but I'm very anxious to get Xizor back. So a lot of pressure on me to ramp it up to have a good season this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this movie. I'm happy it's coming out in the fall where this should be happening versus like it's a summer release. It's so sunny. Because I think this will find a lot of traction because, you know, typically yeah. people still want to see movies in the fall. And I always hate that, like, it's like that doldrum for like 5 weeks and then we get like another horror film. So right. I'm happy for this. Clint, I know you spoke about it on your podcast, yep. but anything stand out about this trailer or the premise of the movie?
Just the fact that when Michael Keaton came on at the end, he was just like, it was just, it seemed natural to him. Even if it was just like one line, it's like he never yeah. left. He's like, he never left that character after what, like 36 years. So I'm super excited for this movie. This movie is one of the big ones from my childhood. So I'm super excited.
Yeah.
Can't wait. And it was filmed about like 2 hours away from me. So I actually got to go visit the set too over in Vermont. So
that's awesome. Nice.
Didn't see any of the actual filming, but we were able to see like the bridge and the store, the hardware store, stuff like that. So it was definitely cool.
Excellent. How exciting.
I love that fact that Michael Keaton doesn't have to even look good because obviously he's playing Beetlejuice, so he can look really
right.
messed up, and I love that. The other thing I noticed when I saw the trailer and they had the credits, Go and Millar are producing this. Charlie, okay. you remember who they are, right?
Well, of course, yeah, they're the Smallville guys, right?
Exactly. It's amazing where they've gone, and it's like now they're in movies and they're doing all this stuff. So good congrats to those guys. Yeah.
Good partnership. Fun. All right, well... taking a tip from, I said Smallville, and that we bounce right back in to talk about DC Comics. Joker 2, Folie à Deux, which was a film that was pre-James Gunn taking over the DCU, so this is existing outside of the continuity that he's looking to build. But that we were talking about movies for the fall. This is set for October the 4th. It's a sequel to the very dark movie from back in 2018? It was a while back, 2018, 2019. If I'm not mistaken.
I think it was 2019. I think it was one of the last big films before COVID struck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, they're aiming to be DC's first jukebox musical, which I guess I'm not 100% familiar with the expression. Somebody break it down for me. What exactly is a jukebox musical?
So the best way to explain this would be like Moulin Rouge, the movie, and the musical, where they typically take like pop hits or known like the musical catalog, and then they'll redo it a little bit and use it in a film. So it's not like the original films or film music, but they'll take that kind of like, I'm trying to think of other movies where they've done it, where it's basically, it's a way to ground people to a movie.
Was it, would Rocket Man be like that, where it was Elton John songs, but they turned it into like a weird, like, I'm singing Rocket Man and now everybody's floating, like that kind of deal, or?
Well, those were kind of straightforward versions. This is kind of like the updated version of it. So, I'm trying to think of another version. I don't know. But in this case, they're going for, I mean, obviously, Joker's dealing with mental health issues. I'm guessing a lot of this will be in his brain. If you think of like the Scrubs musical, where it was basically the woman imagined everyone singing, I feel like this is going to be that way. Right. Where, and they're going in the route of they want to go like over the what they call it, the American Songbook, where you get 30s, 40s songs.
So Rod Stewart is going to show up. You know, that's what his career in the last 25 years has been nothing but that.
So you think of like those songs from like Cole Porter or that like Michael Bublé would do,
right?
That jazzier, and they're going to make it more of like a classical musical, like Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. So I think that's such an original take, because the original Joker was so like grounded and gritty and gross, and maybe this is a love story that's also tilted and imagined. I'm all in on this. It would be kind of cool maybe if they mixed it, maybe something a little bit more modern too, and played with it. But I'm a sucker for movie musicals. I love Moulin Rouge. You know, it's not for everybody though, so we'll see how this goes, but I am stoked for this and the way they're
I hate to say it, but my most recent experience with the musical was the Star Trek one, which I really wanted to love because Star Trek is my life, and I didn't love it. But that doesn't mean that's not really this is positioned with, like, you know, and now they're, you know, dancing around, I've got you under my skin, while they're also, you know, flaying, you know, torturing some guy or whatever, you know, because it's the Joker. So it could, yes, it could be. And again, Lady Gaga, an enormous talent, and obviously Joaquin is enormously talented as well. That, you know, Joker film was haunting and disturbing and brilliant, and so much so that I've not gone back to it because I was so like, ooh, it was so
made effective. An impression.
It really did. So I'm definitely looking forward to this. But this is a kind of a turn, you know, in doing this jukebox musical kind of thing, which I now understand the concept. So very interested, and this could be definitely a very integral part of the fall box office. So I'm all for it. It sounds cool.
Yeah. So Clint, the original Joker was kind of a, it had a huge audience, which was surprising for the source material and everything that.
Very
it was DC doing something different at the time, where they were basically, they were struggling with their audiences and their messaging. So any thoughts on, you know, where this was going to go?
I don't know. I love the idea of it. Like you said, I kind of hope it turns into like this romantic, macabre musical type of thing. I'm a huge musical fan. The family is as well. So I'm definitely looking forward to it, but I don't know how it's going to click with major audience people. Like, I want it to do well in the theaters, but I'm not sure if it will. I'm really excited for a trailer. That's what I'm really looking forward to. So I think that'll really tell. But I personally, I'm definitely looking forward to it. So, and I hope it does well.
It's funny you bring that up about musicals and audiences. Like, this year we had a couple movies that came out and they underplayed that they were musicals. Mm-hmm. Mean Girls, Color Purple, and Wonka.
Yep.
All were all musicals, they rarely even had any music in their trailers, which was such a weird choice.
Right. Yep. Right. But how did they fare? I mean, did they do well because it was a secret, or was it not a factor? Well, talking about this being a musical hurt this, or did people assume because Lady Gaga is involved? Because that's been, you know, A Star is Born is the other big film I can think of her in.
Yeah. Wonka was huge, but you know, obviously the last or the original Willy Wonka had music in it, so that kind of helped it.
Right.
Now The Color Purple was never a musical, kind of some rough material, but apparently people enjoyed that. They thought the songs worked.
Right.
Mean Girls was based on a musical on Broadway, so I think if people knew that, they were kind of, it has an fan base, so I think that did pretty well. I just started that movie. I need to watch more.
Is that over on Paramount Plus?
I believe so.
I have to check it out as well. So, well, cool. All right. Well, jumping into, legacy sequels, is that's the, That's the theme of the day, because we've got another one coming up. Actor Christopher McDonald, a.k.a. Shooter McGavin, a.k.a. the guy who in one of the finest episodes of TNG, Yesterday's Enterprise, love him, suggested that Adam Sandler already has a script for a sequel to Happy Gilmore, which I'm sure will just be on Netflix, because doesn't Netflix own him or vice versa? Yeah.
I mean, he's like a long-term contract.
It was like a ridiculous amount of money, too.
It's practically like a Las Vegas residency with that guy, I'll tell you. So, I mean, everybody knows Happy Gilmore, big cult classic back in 1996, you know, with classics like Happy Gilmore, who's this basically malcontent man-child who plays hockey, but then he gets sidelined and takes up golf and just plays golf like hockey, if I'm remembering.
Well, he's got to save his grandma's house, right? He's got to save his grandma's house.
And then he also beats up Bob Barker. Those are the most notable things about those films. But yeah,
our favorite, Apollo Creed is the golf coach, gets his hand taken by the gator. Remember that? Yeah,
it's all on the hips.
Carl Weathers, R.I.P.
Yeah, so this is I know. Rest in power. Apollo Creed and Grief Karga from The Mando. So it sounds like this is still being discussed, because McDonald was on a podcast or show or something that I'm not terribly familiar with. Said he saw Adam Sandler a couple of weeks ago, and he said, McDonald, you're going to love this. And he said he showed me a first draft of Happy Gilmore, too. So regardless, this does mention in the bottom here, with Sandler's Netflix deal, there's an obvious reason to believe that it would be developed by the streamer instead of a theatrical film. Because, when was the last time he was in a theatrical film? Name me something. I'm listening.
Uncut Gems. Was that a theatrical release or Netflix?
I'm pretty sure it's theatrical because it was A24, I believe.
Got it. Yeah, and he was critically acclaimed in that. And so that must have been his last one that he was in, Charlie. So
okay.
But he does like this thing on the Netflix films. He does like. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say I don't know that I've watched any of his recent output myself. Have you guys sampled any of his more recent stuff on Netflix?
I haven't watched. I think he's got a new one. I think it's called Spaceman, I think.
That's a weird one. Yeah, that looks
weird. And I haven't watched it yet, but and his comedies on Netflix are definitely hit or miss with me. Not like I'm a huge fan of his older ones. Though, I could watch him in dramas all day. Hopefully it'll be good.
I think we shotgun through his Christmas one that was out, because during the season, didn't he have one where he was Santa Claus or Santa Claus's brother or third cousin or, Uber driver or something? I swear to God,
I don't remember that one. The one I did see, though, that was very good. It's an animated film called Leo, and it's very cute. It's
I remember hearing about that. Yeah,
it's got a lot of good songs in it. It's really good. The guy behind Triumph the Insult Comic Dog actually directed it. His name? I can't remember what his name is, but he was, big part of Conan O'Brien and all the skits, but he directed Leo. Leo's great. I would highly recommend it if you got kids and you just want to watch it. And we actually laughed. We saw it during Thanksgiving with my sister's kids, and we all loved it.
Oh, cool. Good deal. Well, when this develops and it's on, because it sounds like it's, it's inevitable, but it's probably a year or so out. I'll check it out, because I'm sure it'll be just like Coming to America 2. It'll rewash all the same bits, and maybe you'll smile once or twice, and you can have it on while you're playing a game on your phone. Who cares?
The real question is Drew Carey going to be on there to replace Bob Barker? And
that would be a nice little twist, honestly.
Direct continuity. I like it. All right. Well, final story has to do with Marvel Zombies, which is this is spinning off over on Disney Plus from the MCU's animated arm, which is What If, which is I've talked about many, many times. We discussed on the show. It was always one of my favorite concepts in Marvel. Take a story, make a little twist, and then kind of see what comes from it. So in the animated version has been about things that have happened in the MCU. And one of the biggest pieces that they dabbled in but didn't get too scary with was Robert Kirkman in the early 2000s created Marvel Zombies out of one of these little what if stories. You know, what if there was a zombie virus that swept through the 616 superhero universe and all
actually,
of our heroes?
Charlie, I'll do my nerd.
Please
actually,
continue.
Marvel Zombies actually came out of the Ultimate Fantastic Four. That was one of the only thing that came from. Yeah. So it was kind of one of those placeholders and had a huge amount of spin-off books too.
The other part of that is, wasn't the Ultimate Reed Richards and Professor X connected somewhere? Because he wears the same outfit. Remember the dome, like the weird helmet? There's something to that, I think. I don't know.
They had a name for the person from the Ultimate Universe that was like that. Yeah. Because now Professor X in the Krakoa books looks like that. So it's kind of a intermingled.
But anyway, yeah, certainly the first miniseries, which spun off of, as you said, Ultimate Fantastic Four back in the day, was written by Robert Kirkman of The Walking Dead fame. Obviously, the most famous zombie anything that's happened in the last 20 years, pretty much. So this is going to become its own production, and head of streaming television animation Brad Winderdom is making it very clear that this is a very adult program. It's going to be intense. It's going to be TVMA all the live long day. So this is pretty exciting, but I know that producing these animated bits takes a couple of years without a doubt, because I know we're a while out from seeing the third season of What If, even though they tease us with a clip at the end of season two. So that it leads me to kind of wonder how long their production is really going to take. So, because as I'm continuing to scroll down on this, looks like Iman Vellani, or the Ms. Marvel character, was going to be involved. That's pretty cool. Todd, what do you think?
She's going to be kind of like the main character this is around. And the Zeb Wells who wrote several Marvel Zombies even said, I'm not involved in this, but I do know it's going to be 4 episodes long. So it's going to be more of a micro series, which is cool.
I like that.
Because obviously
make it very long. Very much so.
But I love Marvel Zombies. I love a lot of the books. I love what they did with everybody. It was so horrifying, but it's interesting and fun. So I am all for this. If it's MA, it's even better. And especially after X-Men 97, which I don't know what else I can say about that series. That's amazing. I am all about Disney Plus going all in on animation. So give me more.
Yeah.
Definitely.
They've been doing some good stuff. So yeah, What If is without a doubt one of the favorites in this house. Captain Carter is one of my wife's top Marvel characters, and that really we owe almost all of that to What If. So that's good stuff. So cool. All right, Clint, what about you? Where do you land with Marvel Zombies?
Oh, I'm all for it. I'm a big zombie fan of like anything. So if I can see some superheroes just tossing zombies aside and everything, especially now that you just informed me that it's mature rated, definitely all in. Yeah. I'm excited.
Dig in. Good deal.
Cool. Isn't it cool now on the Disney Plus app? Hulu's all in there now.
So good.
Yeah. It's all there for your enjoyment.
It's so good. And they got like the buttons already there if I want Star Wars, click it. Marvel.
Oh my god. I've been on such a Star Wars kick lately, and of course we do a Star Wars program on this very network, that I've been wearing out that Star Wars button on my Disney Plus, because I love the show. The shows are so short, you can just rewatch them again. Yep. So I just started watching Mando again today because it's like, why not? But anyway, all right. Well, that takes us out of the news. So it's time for me to get up my phone, open up that Fuber app, that feeble Uber app. We've got to get ourselves down to the Geek Easy so we can talk about what we are watching and enjoying. But before we do that, playing on the radio in the Fuber, feeble Uber car is this great message from our sponsor.
Hey, Secret Friends Unite, let me tell you about Zencastr. We use them for our show, and now they're supporting us. Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content, all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been easier. And we chose Zencastr because of the ease of use. High quality output And it makes it super easy for our guest to come on. We had multiple solutions we tried before, and Zencastr has just been the best fit for us. Why Zencastr? It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sounds and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. So if you're interested in making an easy, high-quality podcast just with the click of a browser button, go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SFU1. You'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Now back to the show.
Talk nerdy to me. Talk nerdy to me.
We're sitting in the Geekeasy, cover bands playing, drinks are poured, and we are getting our nerd on. So, Clint, when I see what you've got on your list, I'm a very happy man.
Maybe. I don't know. Once I start talking about it, you might not be.
Uh-oh. Dig deep.
So, first, Shogun on FX. Absolutely love it. It's fantastic.
I gotta get around to it.
But
now it's all on Disney Plus, right? Because that's on Hulu. Yes.
Right, yeah.
And so it's just one portal. Yep. Yeah.
Good stuff. I don't think I have anything bad to say about that show at the moment. The acting,
is it over now? Like, could I sit and watch it?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Like two more episodes, yep. I think. Yep. Two more?
I think it's two, yeah. Yep.
Then I will wait, and then April and I will watch that for sure.
It's Charlie. It's very adult, too, so you do get boobs and F-bombs.
Okay, I'm into it.
You're in. I'm there.
You had me at boobs. Quit drilling. You struck oil.
Yeah, the attention to detail and the costumes, the writing, just cinematography of it. Just as soon as I watch it, I am immersed immediately in that show. Just fantastic all around.
It's great. It's got like the grumpy Brit who, you know, it just anytime and you know, it's just you just see him and his reactions. I love that.
Yep.
And I've heard feedback.
I'm here for reaction.
I've heard that series versus there was an original like miniseries back in the late 70s or 80s, which apparently really minimized a lot of the Asian aspect and mostly focused on Richard Chamberlain. This one doesn't. Mm-hmm. It really focuses on where we're at. And it seems like every episode really has something spectacular that happens.
I think the lack of Richard Chamberlain focus might have to do with the fact that he's dead. I mean, I don't know.
True. He didn't have a cameo in this, Charlie.
It's surprising. They didn't hold a piece of paper. Here's Richard Chamberlain. I can help it.
Yeah, I can't wait. And obviously, it's not going to have a second season unless they come up with new material or something. And that's perfectly fine with me. Yeah. It's such a pleasant surprise. I always look for it. It's the first thing I watch on. I think Wednesday is when it comes out. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. It is supposed to be like ending right at the end of the book. So as much as I'm watching it and I want more from it just because it's just so good, I know I'm not going to get it, which. Whatever. I'll take what I can get, I guess.
Sometimes that's a wish you don't want fulfilled. Yep, I want more.
Exactly. Right. Yep. And then we've got the live action Avatar on Netflix.
not killing you. I like the first episode. I haven't watched more. I need to watch more though.
Yeah, the first episode was decent and my daughter and I are currently watching it. She's a big Avatar fan and I think we're one episode till the end and they do the story fine justice wise and stuff, but the acting and writing is just like, it's rough sometimes.
any big names in that? Like anybody I'd recognize? It sounds like it was all day and date dropped. I mean, if they're all out there now, right?
It was.
It is. Yeah. And there's no names that I recognize myself. And I think it's already been approved for like two more seasons, I think.
Yeah, they're going to complete the full arc, and which I like, because yeah. Netflix has been horrible about not. Charlie, the one person you will know is the X-Wing pilot from Mandalorian.
Oh, the Kim's Convenience guy, Captain Carson Teva. Yeah.
Yes, he plays Uncle Iro, who is awesome. One of my favorite characters in the series. Yeah,
I like that dude. His it's cool that my next cosplay is the formal jacket that both he and Hera wear in Ahsoka when they're on trial. I found a vendor who's a very cool jacket. So that is on a very, very slow boat from China. I think it might have finally gotten to our shores, but it's still not here. And I have a photo shoot next weekend. I don't think it's going to get here in time.
Can you say, please, we'll do this in post, and they'll put the jacket on
you. Oh, yes, I'll have my photographer photoshopping onto me.
I did hear on the series that, like, the final episode, like, of the first season, they go all in hard, like, budget-wise, so maybe...
It's definitely watchable for sure. I mean, I've definitely sat through worse things. It's just there's some lines there and delivery that are just like, eesh.
I had a similar experience rewatching the first film in this Godzilla versus Kong, which we did when we got home on Friday night because we were driving home and I said, was there a movie before this one? Because it feels like...
I had to remind Charlie we podcasted about it and he's like, oh, that's right.
And so, we watched it and we watched it and we were like, I don't remember any of this.
Had Joe Moran. We had Mr. Badbit on that one. I'm like, I'm pretty sure we would have talked about that. So I looked up. But yeah, Charlie had some rough stuff going on at that time. Yeah, so that is totally, true, yeah. totally get that. No problem.
Happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and Charlie, I don't know how you caught up. No, we'll talk about that when we talk about the movie. But
it was
very cool.
Challenge.
Yeah, I'm just happy we're getting this content that I love so much. So yeah. I'm hoping I enjoy it. But I've heard some things similarly to that it has some lacking bits, which is a shame. But So for myself, I have finished Halo Season 2. So spoiler free.
Okay. Good.
I will say. This season is a improvement, but it's still a hot mess because
you see, I just couldn't figure out because I enjoyed the first season. But again, we talked about it ad nauseum, but I was coming from a point of perspective that I wasn't only, well, that's not what happened in the game. And it didn't do this thing and that thing, but I thought it was fine. This one, I feel like is a hot mess. I'm like, it's just not holding my attention. Cause they're like, it's blah, blah, blah. And then here's some aliens talking and he's got the big sword or whatever. And
don't worry, Charlie, you'll get even more confused because they, you know, we're going down a path of like, you know, Chief trying to do some things that I totally get. And I like his momentum, but every time we're pulled away either by side storylines, I feel like the story loses all momentum. It doesn't carry through very well. And I wish it was more focused and constrained because I think that's where it struggles. The other storylines aren't strong enough. And I feel like they detract from where we're going. And I don't know if that was the intention because where this goes at the end changes from the standard continuity we get in the games again, and then it brings out something that I'm like, okay, you should not have done this because at this point you're adding much more complexity and people are just going to be confused on what the hell's going on. I think it failed in that essence because it's like you once again moved away, you made it more complex, and it's like, oh boy, people that are not versed in this are going to be so damn confused, and they're going to feel like they're adding in things that are just not, they never track to. So I hope they have learned. They aren't approved for season 3. They haven't been green-lighted. I hope they continue to take lessons from what worked and what didn't. But at this point, if you're already like, what the hell's going on? You're going to be like,
yeah.
What did I miss? So I think some things work, some things don't.
Yeah.
I think at our heart, when it sticks to the Spartan story, I think it worked great. When
Smarties. They do other things, I love
when it. They have the gobbledygook and other things, it just kind of fails.
You know, the chief who is Pablo
Schreiber.
Pablo Schreiber, who's the half brother of course Liev Schreiber, was one of
really?
The main, yeah.
No clue.
That's something that
you say, Pablo Escobar. I'm like, yeah, I
get absolutely. That. It's the mustache because he was porn stash in Orange Is the New Black, which God, I know you didn't watch that, but he was one of the main characters in the second season of The Wire, which we're finally watching. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was a thug, you know, dock working drug dealer, and he survives at the end, which means he's the guy that ran that thing into that bridge that collapsed in Baltimore. That was him.
No, I'm telling you, Charlie. Too soon.
I know. Too soon. Sorry. Hashtag Baltimore strong. Yeah, crazy. So yeah,
all good. We're all good. You just say
we're fine. Yeah. Baltimore strong.
hashtag will fix everything. But we'll get back to watching that show. But it was one of those that, you know, it's on our calendar. Oh, it's out today and whatever. And it just wasn't grabbing me. So, Clint, where do you land with Halo?
Watch the first season. Absolute hot mess for me personally, even while trying to look at it. I knew it wasn't in the universe, so I tried coming at it from that angle, and I just couldn't do it. So, I mean, I watched it. There was some cool scenes and stuff. I haven't seen season two yet, because honestly, I wasn't even going to watch it. But I have heard some of the fans say in Discord and online that it's actually, you know, better than the last one. So I'll get around to it at some point.
Yeah, yeah, fair. Yeah,
keep your expectations low, Clint.
Right, yeah.
And you'll be fine. Wow. It's like, it's so good. Oh, my God. It's better than The Last of Us.
Expectations low. That's what got me through this Godzilla movie, so I'm so glad you brought that up.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Missed my shot fired early on.
Clint and I will be doing the people's elbow on you.
Right. Yeah, the people's elbow. Oh, Lord. Well, all right. Well, I'll take us home. Program we all watched this week. We talked about it last week with Aaron and company, but X-Men 97. Todd, especially after you and I watched just a handful of the old show, and I was like, this is just trash. I mean, it's like me trying to watch a Transformers cartoon or a G.I. Joe cartoon from back in the day, and I love G.I. Joe, obviously. It just, that show to me didn't hold up. This is friggin' fantastic. Oh my God. And again, when it comes to the X-Men, I have like a 10,000 foot view of some of the biggest storylines, you know, Days of Future Past and Alpha Flight and the Hellfire Club and all of the prime, like, Claremont Byrne stuff from the 70s. But then as we get into the 80s and the 90s, you know, Fall of the Mutants, Inferno, which is what this touched upon. Yeah. And then the Trial of Magneto, I remember reading that issue just even maybe back in the day, out of context, not really understood. I'm like, why does Cyclops have a baby and he lives in Alaska? And that's also when X-Factor started. But then that was the clone, and then they stumbled upon this. So they took, you know, Child of Jean Grey or clone of Jean Grey, and they slid it right into Inferno, which the Goblin Queen, Madeline Pryor, and that was one of those big Marvel crossovers in 1987, 88. So Spider-Man, Spider-Man was touched by that, and that gave us the Demogoblin, which is that's one of my swing. If you look, you can't see, but I have the little Spider-Man all around my studio.
Yeah, it was hell on earth.
But yeah, that was the Demogoblin is a six-armed demonic Spider-Man that came from Inferno. And they took that and they transitioned that into their baby getting the legacy virus and having to get beamed to the future. And then it becomes Cable. They do all that in, you know, 21 and a half minutes. It was the bomb. This is one of the coolest things Marvel's done in a long time, you know, especially with their litany of failures at the box office in the last couple of years, to see something this good. They nailed it. This was really great.
I was so happy to see how deftly they handled it without going too geeky or whatever, made it a good coherent storyline in an event that was so huge. They basically nailed it so well. Obviously they could have gone longer and done things, but they captured the heart. And that's what I think is always successful in adaptation. Get the heart and everything else will fall in place. And I loved it. And you know, you got some really cool Easter eggs. You got Mr. Sinister back again. You covered the Cable piece.
That was good.
Off and do something else. And they didn't kill her. They left it open there where she is in the comics. So I absolutely loved it. They're even like Charlie at the end of this episode, they're going to cover Life Death, which is a great.
Yes. That was really, you know, Forge and Storm. I remember reading those about issue 186, 87.
Chris Claremont signed my copy.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Back at C2 when we were there. Yeah. We were there in 2020, right before the world shut down. You and I went to that show. And we're going to. And we're going to be at Fan Expo in Chicago this fall. Yeah, so look forward to that. But real quick, Todd, the only thing that was really missing, anytime I saw Bishop, where was that harmonica solo? I was super pissed.
That's true. A big misc. The man with no name.
Yeah, I was bummed out. Clint, what's your take on episode 3?
I think it's great so far. I'm just happy that it's good, because like you said, the past couple like Marvel films and stuff have been, I've watched them and they're serviceable for me, but I'm just happy that this came out good, and I'm definitely loving it. I love the old style cartoon coming back and everything. It's just been a great ride.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Most definitely. So, all right. Well, and for my last one, Todd is going to take a 5-minute smoke break so that we can talk about Star Wars. But the Bad Batch, we're now on to episode 8 of, and again, obviously for full coverage, please listen to the Holocron Chronicles right here on this network. Mark Carabin and myself, and usually a guest, Peter Stein, who's my sideman on Code 47, our Star Trek podcast, was on in full clone regalia. He kept his clone helmet on the entire broadcast. I was impressed by that. Peter's actually a very talented guy and a very dedicated cosplayer. We did get the return of a character this week that, canonically speaking, really does make sense, because we're talking about Asajj Ventress. Asajj Ventress is one of the witches of Dathomir. They hold dominion over the power of death, aka everything you saw in Ahsoka. So her surviving her death, which happened in a book called Dark Disciple, which was during the Clone Wars era, kind of makes sense. But this season, for me, while we did get, you know, the, not this past episode, the one before that, we got a visit to a space Florida planet where it happened in a swamp. And it was one of those, I'll help you out, but you got to do this thing that might get you killed. You know, your standard Mandalorian season 1 plot. While there has been a bit of a drag, they're pushing in a good direction of finding out why the Empire wants Omega so bad. And the fact that she is, they've managed to generate a Force-sensitive clone, and they need to take her. And that plot line comes all the way back around to what we see in The Mandalorian with Moff Gideon. So, I think they've done it. I'm kind of bummed out, because I do get screeners from Paramount for Star Trek Discovery, which comes on this week. Episodes 1 and 2 air on Thursday on Paramount Plus. Plug, plug, plug. Please watch it. It's the best of the series so far. But I would love it if I got screeners for something like this, because people who do have screeners are saying the back half of the season is dark. It's dark and it's scary, and there's going to be some bad stuff happening. So, Todd is making, he's saying 10. Does this mean I get 10 seconds? 10 seconds?
No, I'm getting like, up? Ooh, dark. Ooh.
Todd, I know you don't watch, totally fine. Clint, what's your take on season 3?
I love it. Love it. And I waited until this last episode came out so I could binge it all.
Yeah.
And it's just so good. So good. I love how it's dark and everything. And
If Caesar shows up. Oh God, that'll be your last minute. The clones all killed by the Black Sun, and Caesar steps out, because the Black Sun is canonical, and he kind of is, but you've seen like the back of his head or something. It came from the Clone Wars.
Caesar has a hot take on Bad Batch.
Caesar, how are you feeling about the Bad Batch?
Wouldn't that be great? You just got like, you know, like the old Conan O'Brien, you get a picture of Caesar, but my lips. I'm gonna be him.
He says it's bad. The Bad Batch have got one thing right. Bad. I mean,
we should have thrown it in the trash.
Oh my God! Now, Todd, have you watched any of the show?
The only episodes I've seen the Bad Batch were the Clone Wars end episodes where they introduced them.
I basically said
I watched the one episode. I'm like, I never want to see them again.
Oh my!
And I haven't, because I didn't watch them.
Oh, it's rough. That hurts my soul, Todd.
In fairness,
the prequel era, I have no love for the prequel era. I just ignore it because it's a battle I leave alone, because there's a younger group that loves it, and I'm like, that's true. Good for you. Yeah,
true. No,
it's poison to me, and I leave it alone.
And I mean, I don't love the prequels. I am going to see episode 1 in the theaters next month, because I haven't seen a Star Wars movie in the theater in 5 years. I'm excited about that, even though April and I will sit there and heckle it, because that's what we do. We have an entire podcast dedicated
to heckling.
Could be. I'll bring my Galaxy's Edge lightsaber and fend them off.
I was going to ask one question. So Charlie, obviously the 20-hour you know, the film marathon is not showing in your area or my area. Clint, is that something that is in your area and you're going to do?
No, I wish it was, because I immediately looked it up and I was like, I'm taking a 2 days off of work. And I think the closest
is it showing over 2 days or is it showing all in one?
It's 24 hours, but I would need 20 hours. Great.
Yeah. It probably starts at what? Does it start at like 8 o'clock at night?
8 p.m. on the 3rd. There's a theater in Chicago, but I just couldn't really, because you would go and, you know, you wouldn't need a hotel room because you would be there the whole time and then I just turn around and drive home. but I'm sure it's sold out by now.
Just get a projector, Charlie, in your backyard.
Yeah.
Put it on your garage door.
Yeah,
and do that, and people will come over and pay.
Oh my God! And
money.
I certainly won't get. Yes, Disney's listening. but I remember when I shared that it's in the most random set of places. It's this theater in Idaho and this one in Des Moines, Iowa. It's so random. Now, Matt, Matt, I'm sorry, Clint. I don't know what you look like a Matt. whereabouts in North? Are you a little bit of an accent? Are you in Canada?
No, I'm in New Hampshire. I'm a few hours south of Canada.
You're the only person I've ever met from New Hampshire.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. See, I'm
not
from
many
Detroit.
Of us.
I'm from Detroit originally, and I frequently get told I have a little lint of Canadian in my voice. So, yeah, so we get a little bit of a bleed. Yes, New Hampshire. But, yeah, it's playing in New York City, so that'd be the only place you could
go. Yeah, that's the closest one. And like you said, it's very random. There's only, I think, 7 theaters in the entire United States that's doing it, which is
– And, yeah, there's 3 in L.A., which makes sense.
Of course,
And there's one in – yeah, so – but at any rate, yeah, I would – I don't need to sit, because again, you'd go for 20 hours and you'd sleep when you need to sleep and you'd be awake when you need to be awake. And so it'd be fine. But yeah.
Sleep through the prequels.
Yeah, exactly. Sleep through the prequels. And then just leave after Jedi. You don't need to see the
rest.
Oh, I know. So sad.
Come on, Charlie. When are you going to see Babu Frick again?
Hey, I'll see you when I get home, when I watch those clips on YouTube. Yeah, the mustache. All right. Well, that takes us out of the geek easy. Time to skip out on the check yet again. But I have my app out. I have my Air Qantas app up and ready to get a ticket down under. Hologram Tina and the Mutants waiting with us to talk about what's going to end up being a firing squad here. Godzilla, X-Kong, the new Frozen Empire. Let's do it.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
Thank you, Tina. We're sitting in the Thunderdome, where the mutants have been gathered for a topic or a game to be entertained. And this week, we're talking a spoiler-filled discussion of Godzilla, X-Kong, the new Empire. Godzilla and the Almighty Kong face a colossal threat hidden deep within the planet, challenging their very existence and the survival of the human race. This is number 5, I believe, of the Marvel universe, starting with Godzilla 2014, Kong Skull Island. Then we had Godzilla King of Monsters. We had Godzilla X-Kong. Versus Kong?
I think it was Versus. I think,
First X. And
which is a crossover in Japanese. Typically, it's something X something. It's like a crossover.
It's weird that they changed it because it wasn't obviously that way the last time around. So
exactly, yeah. So debuted this weekend. Adam Wingard's back. Basically, a budget of about $135 million, which is kind of crazy considering we've got other movies that are like $300, $350 million.
And those are all doing so well.
Exactly. has done very well so far. About $115 million, $14 million total worldwide in this opening weekend, which I think was originally only supposed to do like 50 domestic.
Yeah,
coming in at 80 domestic.
If you actually read the notes I wrote, it was supposed to do 65 and then 80 domestic. Okay. Todd's not great with listening or reading.
Oh, no, I was just looking at another article earlier today, and they said it was going to be they thought it might come in at 50.
Right,
so
but no,
is even better.
Yeah, it was very, very enthusiastic about how it performed. So and thank God, Todd, you did list the name of the monsters, the Scar King, Little King Kong, and this is Suko, Shimo, Scylla, and Tiamat.
We'll go to that. So Tiamat was the water creature that Godzilla took over in the Arctic. Scylla was the first monster Godzilla took on, which was like that crab monster with the tiny legs. And then Shimo is the ice ultimate deity that we see later in the movie.
Right,
the cast primarily is really a return of most of the cast from the last movie. It's a smaller cast of really like speaking people in this. And the really the newest, biggest part of this movie is Dan Stevens, who is in Legion. He's been in a few other things.
Yeah.
Great actor. I really enjoyed
They didn't get Skarsgård back because I did, as I said, April and I driving away. I'm like, why do I feel like I didn't know anything that was going on in this? I'm like, was there a movie that came before? There had to have been a movie that came before this.
There's a lot of people that are no longer involved in the series. Like Bobby Millie Brown is no longer in this.
I have to tell you, from the Kong 2021, she couldn't act her way out of a paper bag in that movie. She was not good. Her line delivery was like, "You put King Kong to war." Oh my God. It was, that hurt.
So, the series is kind of like, it's kind of amazing that it's actually all come together. The last movie, Godzilla versus Kong, was like one of the first movies post COVID,
right?
We actually did very well. So you know, the fact that we're the series is done as well, it's pretty awesome. We've got other obviously iterations of Godzilla where we have Godzilla Minus One, which I loved.
Oh yeah, big time. I've heard.
And then we also have Godzilla, what is it, Monarch on Apple TV Plus, which is just like, it's kind of crazy. Everything's all over
and that show is very serious, where this is, you know, ends in your typical, hey, we're gonna tear down a town, which is how this one ends. So I would say the Monarch, the Apple Plus series with the Russells, Kurt and Wyatt, playing the same character at different ages, was very cool and very layered, where this was really just a straight up, like, it's Hollow Earth, and then we're gonna tear down, where do they tear down, Hong Kong in the end? It's just there's plenty of cities for us to destroy. In this, I mean, wasn't it Hong Kong? Or was that the last one with Mechagodzilla?
No, it was like Cairo. They were at, what was it?
Yes, destroyed all three of the pyramids.
Yeah, Cairo, Rome. They were, because of the Colosseum. Yep. They were in De Janeiro, Rio de Janeiro.
Rio. That was it. Yes, I did love that. That Godzilla had his little, like a cat bed.
That was so awesome.
The Colosseum. That was pretty good. I did like that.
So I guess we should get into this now that we're kind of like talking through story points. But this is a direct sequel to the last film, where you essentially ended with Godzilla kind of staying in by himself and only will get involved if he senses Kong. They're essentially in a DMZ. They don't involve himself. Kong is now living in the Hollow Earth,
right?
He's
destroyed.
He's kind of looking for other members of his race and has been unsuccessful at finding them. So that's kind of where we land. And then essentially, the girl from the last movie who basically the Eloy, no, Eloy.
Gia is her name. See, it's good that you put the cast.
There was a tribe that was.
Yeah, the Eloy. All, you got it. Yeah.
Is it the Eloy?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. Because I was thinking that's the Eloy is also the tribe from the Time Machine.
The Time Machine, exactly.
With the Morlocks and the Eloy. That is it? Yeah. So she is now being cared for by Rebecca Hall, and she is using sign language to communicate, and she's having a lot of like signals coming to her. She shuts down, she's doing drawings, and that essentially is because she's still tied to Godzilla
Kong,
and also to Kong as well in her tribe. And we find out that that's going to be a SOS signal from her people. And that leads us into the, you know, bringing back Brian Tyree Henry, who essentially is the podcaster who was helping last episode. He's kind of the comedic foil, and he's asked to help because they don't know what's going on. We find out that Kong has a personal veterinarian played by by Dan Stevens, Trapper, where they replace a tooth, which I thought was amazing.
Why couldn't it have been a big gold tooth? It would talk about a missed opportunity.
Bling, put a grill.
Big rapper tooth that just says Godzilla on it. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Foolish.
It's kind of a fun, you know, start off where we introduce this character, these characters, really only one new character really that has a speaking line. Everybody else is just a big monster or an ape or someone who can't speak and they have to do sign language. So you're limited in your cast.
You have the helicopter pilot who got ate when I went up to go to the bathroom. I get back and I'm like, what happened? I'm like, the helicopter pilot dude got ate. I'm like,
ate by the tree.
Well, somebody had to. Yeah, she said by a tree. That's exactly what you said. So you have just a handful of people. And then, it's basically punch up time, which is very hard to argue with. But one thing that I will say, and April pointed out, he says, this movie is very much, we were getting in the car and driving away. She says, this movie is just very much filled with, I think Brian Tyree Henry's character did it better than anyone, of people who just barf nonstop exposition. And so I dubbed it, this is, there was an old song by Crosby, Stills, and Nash called The Marrakesh Express. This movie is the Exposition Express. They're like, well, what if this thing happened to blah, 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 crisscross this thing and we cross the streams and then the flux capacitor goes backwards and it's just, it's worse than Star Trek as far as, except for it's ostensibly real stuff. But there's just, the exposition vomit is that's a great part. That's a fun part of this movie. I'm not even down on it. I just think it's hilarious. I dug it.
Yeah, Charlie, you got to embrace the dumb fun of this movie, and that's what I would say.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is like, if you're already believing there's a Godzilla, there's a Kong, there's
and a hollow Earth. The Hollow Earth, you know, is a big stretch.
If right. you're going to like question the science, right. then why did you even go to this movie? Yeah.
Well, I do have to do this podcast.
Yeah, you can sit out on it like I sat out on a couple other movies, as right. you know.
Yeah. Yes, you did not take a swing at 2015's Fantastic Four, of which we will not.
Or Snake
but
Eyes.
But yeah. I keep bringing it up. And Snake Eyes, which we just covered yep. on our Patreon, our bad yeah. trip to the movies. Yeah.
So with that, Clint, you're a huge fan of the series, as I am. I yep. grew up loving monster movies. I read all the books in my library. They had like Godzilla versus X, you know, Godzilla versus the Mothman or whatever. I loved it. I ate it up.
Yep.
It was awesome.
Godzilla versus the IRS. Dun, dun, dun.
He won't win.
It is interesting that this feels more like a Kong movie than Godzilla. Do you feel like that's the right approach? Because I feel like, I mean, yeah, obviously, when they team up, we've had separate films, but it feels like this was more of a Kong film when Godzilla just showed up when he did.
It was definitely a more Kong-centered film, for sure, mm-hmm. especially with, like, emotion-wise and everything.
Right.
With,
it's a more sympathetic character than Godzilla.
Yeah, they almost made him, you know, have, like, a human side to him type of thing. But we got to see Godzilla a little bit, which was fantastic, but it definitely seemed like a Kong movie. It almost could have been called something else, really, and then just had Godzilla show up here and there.
Kong and friends. My wife was very quick to point out when I would say the monster that he eats in the Arctic, as you said, was that Tiamat?
Tiamat, so, yeah.
Yeah, well, that he does, that when he gets supercharged and he's pink, and April just says, I see that Godzilla saw the Barbie movie because he's pink.
That's right, we're all going pink.
Totally awesome, it's all pink. He says, thank you. He says, hey there, Ken, when he sees Kong.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting because you've got like this whole mythology now about these creatures that are still, you know, like having their own domains that are essentially, they're trying to maintain that. They typically don't get involved, but then you have them show up in different of the portals. And the big thrust of this movie was the fact that we had Scar King, who was essentially, at one point, a threat to Godzilla and others, was going to escape and go out to the world and take over it. And that was kind of the premise. Basically, Scar King was trying to find the portal to get out. And that's kind of led to the whole controversy of this. And it was interesting that the Kong's first meeting of, you know, with his people was this little guy named Zuko. Cute little guy, yep. super nice, you think.
And then all of a sudden,
he goes ape shit, and that's appropriate because he is an ape.
Right.
And like attacks Kong out of the blue, and you get everybody else tired, like, welcome to the Thunderdome, right. my boys.
And then Kong is just like, hey, you know what? Fuck all y'all. He grabs Zuko and starts swinging him around like he's a sack of potatoes.
I was dying in the theater.
I was like, that is that, you know, and I think we were saying in the pre-roll, or maybe as we were getting rolling, I'm like, you know, that's some tough, because, you know, he was acting out. He was being a little shit. And it was a case of fuck around and find out. And that's what he was finding out, is that you don't do that first part. So he's gotten smacked around, but you know what? It was nice that they finally got their stuff put together, and then Kong takes on more of a paternal role. He's even feeding him that thing that he killed. He was like, here, have some of it. But yeah, this is just, that was awesome. Yeah, him using him as a club to beat up the other giant monkeys. That's just,
I mean,
he nailed it.
Obviously, monkey children are stronger than like children, because, you know, people Don't do that to your children. No. They're not a weapon.
Probably no, you'll end up in People magazine. You don't want to do that.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and then we find out that one creature that Scar can control is Shimo, which is essentially an ice elemental, which right. caused the last ice age, which is just exactly. crazy.
I thought that was a cool little tidbit that they put in
there.
And then everybody ends up, you know, back down in the Hollow Earth. So that's where people, they're like, pop up, be like, hello, I'm going to, you know, F stuff up, and then I'm going to go back down to the Hollow Earth. So, yeah, the Hollow Earth is like international waters, right? Just anything goes, right?
Pretty much. And it just always screws me up because I'm like, up is down is up, and then you get to a certain point, you cross over.
Well, right? They have gravity, but they don't have gravity. I know that was a big part in the last film as well. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, with the flow.
So that was another part where basically we had Gia. Obviously, she felt a connection. She needed to help. It was an SOS. So they decided to go back and basically go into the Hollow Earth, and Gia's trying to find her people, and they do. And you find out that they can control gravity within their own area. And that's where I kind of lost it, because I'm like, to do this, we have to join the two
pyramids.
And right. I'm like, I'm so confused.
Yeah. And you're right. I kind of tuned out at that point as well, because I was like, how is that really going to? Plus, they destroyed all the pyramids. Oh, it was so it was so brutal. You know, you would think that with all the wanton destruction. And again, I was listening to another podcast that was talking about this, and they said, you know, where the Apple series about Monarch and really the 2014's Godzilla seemed to take a very serious, like, oh, this is the human cost of everything and blah, blah, blah. Where now it's just like, and now we're destroying Rio de Janeiro and I'm picking up a building and swinging it. And it just seems to have, this is just much more comic booky, satirical, you know, and so it's two slices of it. It's kind of like how we were talking about Lower Decks, you know, and it's just, this is this satirical take on Star Trek. And then you have Star Trek Discovery, which is very serious, or Picard, which is very serious. So different sides of the same universe where, you know, things are wacky and crazy. And it's like, you know, who are they going to find in Hollow Earth now? You know, are they going to find Dr. Doom or the Savage Land or, you know, Gorilla Grodd? I could work that in, you know.
There's a deep pool of other monsters they can pull from, which I love
so much.
Underlayer.
Which I think is funny because, Charlie, you never saw Godzilla Minus One, but Clint, you and I can agree that that movie was all about the human impact.
Yeah, it was so good. God.
Yeah. All right. Is that on a streamer yet? Can I check that out? Or
it's not out streaming yet. I know they just announced like the physical edition, but no date for that either.
All right. Well, I'm sure. Okay. That was one of those. I just didn't get around to it, but everybody was raving about it. So.
Yeah. My biggest problem, maybe Clint, you can speak to this too, is literally everywhere they went, like Godzilla or Kong, it's like, oh, there's the pyramids of Giza. We're just going to break shit and hopefully nobody dies.
Wiped it out. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
not being cautious at all. So,
no.
Like I said, in transitioning into the ridiculous, Kong's like Iron Man arm, where they're like, oh, well, he got frozen by the whatever, so he needs time to heal. And if he only has one arm, he's going to die. So the good news is, at the destroyed outpost here in Hollow Earth where we're stranded, there's a robot arm that they were working on for him, and it's autonomous. So we'll just push a button and it'll like Iron Man in the suitcase on its way over to him. And then he's got the super punch. So that tilted.
I loved it.
It tilted, you know, a little bit more into the comic bookiness of it, which again, you know, Todd and I were talking before I went to go see it, and I said, you know, my expectations are low. He says it's monsters punching monsters. It's not going to be Shakespeare in the Park. And I'm like, all right. And they did. And you know what? For that, for the fun.
And there was Shakespeare in the Park, Charlie, right?
Did they stomp on Shakespeare? Was that something Godzilla stomped on?
You didn't cry at Godzilla's speech of Othello, I mean, what even doing?
Oh,
you have a heart.
Oh, dear Mothra, I knew you well. but no, the last, you know, the third act of this, obviously the end of the film, everything's totally ridiculous, swinging stuff around, being, you know, destroying a city. But again, the bottom layer of it is that it was fun. We were having fun watching it. We're having fun, you know, kind of, you know, heckling it in our own way. And, it was a blast. It was a blast. I will give it to you that it was a blast.
I loved when Kong had to bring Godzilla into it. It was so hilarious because they're duking it out and like Kong just like dragging him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
You're Godzilla doing the suplex. Because you're right. It's not like they can even suplex.
Oh my God. Yeah. He suplexed him. Like we're watching wrestling now.
Something that wasn't on my bingo list was Godzilla suplexing Kong. I'm glad it was there, but
it was a very walking tall Dwayne the Rock Johnson kind of situation. they were gonna have to throw hands in order to get this.
Yeah. The other part I love is anytime you've got like floating rocks and you use the rocks to traverse it. And I love that. And, I love how, like, Suko got involved with, like, the hijinks.
Yep.
And everybody was together. You got, like, the human team bringing in those electric beasts. That was fun.
Yeah.
Everybody got to participate.
everybody had a fun, good time. And only four areas and one of the seven great wonders of the world destroyed. So that's
every bridge in Venice is now destroyed.
Just walking through.
The man walk. Like I said, and I do love that the Colosseum became the kiddie bed for Godzilla. He was just like, April said, he's like, this is mine now.
Yep.
Exactly. And everybody's embracing it. So I just love that. Good. Yeah, I mean, tourism is never been better in Rome.
Oh, of what's left of it.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're willing to. Yeah, it's like those people that go in like the safari, you know, the safari in Africa where it's like, we're going to see some lions. You might get eaten, but that's okay. You might get stuck on, you know, like get stepped on by Godzilla.
It might be the last thing you see, but you will see something. Oh, my gosh.
I love, though, too, that this movie knew what it was. Yeah. That one scene of Mothra, Godzilla and Kong, just like, and I'm like, if Mothra could have high-fived them both, that would have been even better.
Yeah, and they had a endgame moment of the two of them like doing the running, or like an endgame where Ant-Man pops up and then he opens his hand and Hulk and War Machine and with Rocket they all jump out. They're like. Charlie's Angels.
It's like, or Gambit riding on Wolverine in X-Men 97.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those guys could have showed up somehow in this, and it would just all would have been great. So, you're right. Todd, I will give you credit. A movie that knows what it is and just really hams it up.
Yeah, this is not Transformers where it's like 85% humans.
And right, maybe no. Like I got exactly what I expected for what I paid for, pretty much.
Right, exactly. Yep. So based on that, definitely enjoyable. Yep. Definitely. Yeah.
So Clint, as we end this, overall, did this make you happy as a fan?
Definitely. I got exactly what I paid for. I knew I was going to go in. Stuff was going to get destroyed. Thousands of people were going to die, and it's okay because it's Godzilla and Kong.
They did it. Good stuff.
Probably the worst thing for me with the movie, honestly, was the soundtrack. I thought that was all over the place. Like one moment you've got synthy like 80s soundtrack for
Yacht Rock too.
The actual like songs they had in it were great. I like those songs, but they didn't fit where they had it. And then they have classical orchestra going on in the next scene. I just thought it was all over, but
I was, it took me having to go back and watch the 2021 movie, as I said, when we get home to think, are they just trying to rip off Guardians of the Galaxy with that vibe? But they did but it's in both films. So it's a continuous of a ripoff from the 2021 film, but I'm like, because if you remember the 2016 Suicide Squad tried to be like, classic rock is
Bohemian Rhapsody, boy.
That's what makes people love stuff. So, for me, that was a definite like, hey, it worked for somebody else. Let's do it for us. But yeah, it was very. You're right. It was very disjointed. The song didn't, necessarily.
Yeah, it just didn't mesh up well. But other than that, that was fantastic.
Can Can they not use like the iconic Godzilla theme? Like
I don't know.
Toho own that? And they're like, you aren't using it for your films, guys.
Right? Maybe because with Minus One, maybe they have exclusive rights to that score. I don't know, but
yeah, that iconic Godzilla sound. Yeah. I mean, it would be fantastic, but they'd probably like remix it, and make it a trap mix. So maybe that's a bad idea.
Mixes with his different colors on his back as the tempo goes with
auto tune it. Oh,
yeah. It'd be like, I remember that commercial. It was like Godzilla versus Barkley from the 80s. Yeah, not enough Charles Barkley in this film.
He could have been one of the people. Maybe he was on a holiday in Rome and he got squished.
Yeah, but that's true. Know. Yeah, if you look really closely at
Easter egg in the background.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Oh boy. Well, I will tell you, it's time for us now to give our review, like our review scores. So I'm going to say 1 out of 10 annoying apes. Because Zuko is an annoying little ape, but he grew to love him.
But he was just one. All right, I'll take a stab. And on Todd's dumb fun scale, where I'm not really judging this as a film that like, oh, well, I really thought this really had a message and blah, blah, blah. This is like a 7 or an 8 on the dumb fun scale, because it was, like I said, it was the Exposition Express. It was a lot of blather. Especially when I coupled it up with watching the immediate prior film, the human acting is cannot be eclipsed by the acting of the CGI creatures, because they nailed it. It was their finest work. Where's the Oscar for that? So I did, and it was the dumb funniest movie I've seen in a bit.
Clint,
I definitely agree with that too. As a dumb fun type movie, 7.5, 8. Yeah, because some of the acting in there and some of the story plots, like especially with the arm, they're literally like miles away. They don't have a vehicle, and all of a sudden Trapper is back within an hour, which in a regular movie, no, I can't do this. But in a Kong versus Godzilla, it's okay. Everything is okay with this.
Right. Why not? Time dilation of Hollow Earth.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I love this movie for what it is. It knows what it is. I mean, the fact that Mothra's like kind enough to like, oh, I saved you and I'm going to put your ship down nicely. Like right. That, the humans got involved. The other part I liked is the fact that this didn't expand and have 8 new characters. It essentially said, Dan's new. We've got 3 characters that actually talk. Everybody else is just big robots, or big monkeys. And
see, even you couldn't remember that this was a Mechagodzilla.
Exactly. So I'm so glad, versus like we just saw Ghostbusters last week, where they introduced like 18 new characters, and it's like it had no focus. So I like that this was focused where it needed to be.
Yeah.
And that made me happy. And that, knew what it was.
The big punch up at the end. Absolutely.
So I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10 little annoying Zukos that you grow to love at the end.
Definitely.
You do. Yes, exactly. While he's biting you, then you can use him as a club. Oh, big fun. All right. Well, let's give a wrap to the program. Clint, thank you so much for coming out and joining us. Where do people find you out there in the world?
You can find me over at Threads with the podcast at Spreading the Nerd, or me personally at Ryuketsu2043. And it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Heck yeah. Well, maybe we'll have a little sidebar conversation about having you on Holocron so we can enjoy talking about
stuff. Right.
God's not around. And as for our resident Star Wars hater, Todd Oxtra, where do people find you out there?
I'm not hating on Star Wars on Threads at T Oxtra, at Secret Friends Unite. I had Twitter. I updated our link tree on Twitter actually to make sure people know that we're primarily going to be on Threads going forward. But if you're on the Twitter and you want to see where you can find us, at T Oxtra, at Secret Friends U.
Very good. And I am trying to be a heck of a lot better at Threads as well. But over on Threads and Instagram, I'm C3 Carpenter. Go ahead and spell it out. I spend a lot of time on our Secret Friends Unite Discord, which is, according to a source, which is me, the most funnest corner of Discord. So you should definitely go over there and join us up there. But I spend a heck of a lot of my time, myself and my wife and a lot of our close friends, run the USS Grand Petoskey. That is one of the biggest chapters of Starfleet, the International Star Trek Fan Club. We are based here in West Michigan, but we have chapters all over the world, thus the international part. I'm also lucky enough to be the coordinator for Region 13, which is Michigan in Eastern Canada. And I actually just recently took on a post as director of public relations for the entire organization in celebration of the organization's 50th anniversary, which is here in 2024. So you might look to see a bunch more promotion about that. I'll not try to overstep here because that would be naughty. But if you're interested in learning more about SFI or about our chapter, sfi.org or the Grand Petoskey website, want to meet trekkers in your area, give us a ping and I'm very happy to help you out. And with that,
trekkersonly.com.
Yes, trekkersonly.com. There you go. It works for the farmers. With that, I will bid everyone a great adieu. remind you that sharing is caring and to keep on trucking.
Be the hero, not the villain.
In a truck.
The never ending story.
Godzilla.
This podcast is part of the Secret Friends Unite podcasting network. Visit secretfriendsunite.com for more great shows, articles, news, reviews, and more. Secret Friends Unite podcasts are available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and other podcast services around the world. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us on Facebook or our new Discord server, or follow at Secret Friends U on Twitter. Please subscribe to Secret Friends Unite on YouTube and visit our merch store at tpublic.com. Just search Secret Friends Unite. Thanks for listening.